From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today we begin a series of extended conversations with interesting Georgians. We're kicking off with a man whose work reflects the full range of the American experience. Kenny Leon was the first African-American artistic director at the Alliance Theater in Atlanta. Later, he won a Tony and has been nominated for Emmy Awards for live stage-to-television productions of The Wiz and Hairspray Live. Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater Company is still going strong in Atlanta, and he's an author. His new memoir is called Take You Wherever You Go. He's going to be the keynote speaker at this year's AJC Decatur Book Festival, and he's joining us now from Chicago. Hello, Kenny.
Hey, Virginia, how are you?
Very well. So excited to speak with you after reading your book. So what are you doing up there in Chicago?
I'm here I'm with the Chicago Ideas Festival, and it's part of the book tour. So I have Felicia Rashad, my frequent collaborator and friend, interviewing me tonight in a one-on-one conversation about the book, about life, about what's next. And I am so looking forward to it. Number one, seeing her, because it's her birthday tomorrow.
Whoa, it's all coming together there in Chicago. Well, the book adds so many layers and so much understanding to your life. You're born in Tallahassee, Florida, 1956, if I've got that right. Your mom, Annie Wilson. But it was your maternal grandmother, Mamie, a huge force in your life. Still, tell us about Mamie Wilson.
Well, Mamie was great. My mother was, I think, 15 when I know that. She was 15 when I was born. And she was pregnant with my brother, and my sister was about two, and she wanted to break away on her own and create a better life for us. So she left me with my grandmother as she ventured down to South Florida. So I stayed in Tallahassee, and I had the benefit of being with my grandmother the early part of my life. Raised in the Southern Baptist Church, sitting on a porch in the country of Tallahassee, Florida. We had no running water. It was just living a country life, and I owe that to a lot of what's happened to me now. It's just those early years with her.
Yeah, you say she prayed me into existence. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I'm the product of generational prayers. I mean, my grandmother never even saw a play until the year before she passed away.
Wow.
And that was at the Alliance Theater. She saw a play of T-Bone and Weasel starring Bill Nunn and Tom Key. And it was her first time seeing a play. And I remember her sitting in the audience. And at that time, she had to be probably the only black woman in the audience. And she kept saying out loud, "Mm-mm, baby, no, don't do that. No, don't do that." And people said, "Who is that woman?" I said, "That's my grandma. Don't mess with her." And then in the second act of the play, you could hear everyone, a chorus of audience members saying, "Uh-uh, baby, no, don't do it." And I use that example of when we sit next to each other, my grandmother with the traditions of the Southern Baptist Church, sitting there next to us, white folks, Jewish folks, people who were different from her. But we rubbed up against each other and became one collective audience. And that's one of the reasons I love theater. You know, we help shape each other's lives. So, yeah, Grandma Mamie saw her first play the year before she passed away. But she always prayed for a better life in America for her grandchildren and her children. And, you know, she had vision, you know. A lot of the men in my life, it was practical, you know. You get a job, get a trade, do what you got to do now. But the women in my life, my grandmother and my mother, they had vision. They say, let him be anything he wants to be.
Yeah.
Let him make the world. The world is bigger. You know, so that's why the book is in honor of them.
Yeah, and it sounds like she just comes through your life over and over again, the things that she said and did. But she had a super hard life. She said it was rough. She had 13 kids, not a great husband. And she said she had to pull the plow.
What? Oh, yeah. Well, as you know, back in the days, my grandmother was probably pregnant every year for like 20-something odd years, you know what I mean, to have those 13 kids. But you had kids to work the farm, you know, and they didn't have animals to pull the plow. And many times, Grandma pull the plow. Mm-hmm. So she was the animal that worked that farm, and then she was still going to fix breakfast and lunch and dinner, and those 13 kids never missed meals. And, you know, she's a very great symbol of strength, of heart, and of vision.
Yeah, formidable woman. Okay, so we dug up something based on the book that we wanted you to hear. So that's Dorothy Norwood singing, "Jesus, keep me near the cross." Okay, you pick it up.
The hills and stream well flows from Calvary's mountain.
All right, that's Dorothy Norwood with Kenny Leon. Singing, "Jesus, keep me near the..." Well, so what does that mean to you? What was that?
I don't know. I mean, I grew up in a Southern Baptist church, but that is the song that I hum if ever I feel nervous in life. You know, if I'm on an airplane and there's turbulence, you know, I go right into, you know, "Jesus, keep me near the cross." And it has a calming effect on me. And, you know, I don't know if it's God or my grandmother, but it's a very soothing, calm thing. If I'm nervous, I go into "Jesus, keep me near the cross." So that's just something that happens. So I love that song.
Yeah. And your mom and your grandmother, they taught you, it sounds like, to believe in yourself and taught you about trust, searching for answers. You say that's at the heart of everything you do as a director. Where did that come from? How did that ability to search instead of just accept come from?
I don't know. I mean, I think, the book, Take You Wherever You Go, is built on a triangular foundation. You know, my teachings from my grandmother, teachings from my mother, and the teachings from the great August Wilson and his 10-play cycle. So everything that I've learned or that I pass on to young folks, I can trace it back to one of those three people, my mother, my grandmother, or August Wilson.
Yeah.
And so I trust them. I trust that. And what I try to say in the book is that, young people, you have everything that you need right inside of you. You build success on who you are, where you came from. And what I know about myself, I'm a good old country boy who lives in Atlanta, Georgia, who was born in Tallahassee, who was raised by his grandmother and mother. And the more I embrace that and own that, the clearer my journey and my story is. And I went to a historically black college in Atlanta. I went to Clark College. I didn't go to Juilliard, where some of my colleagues went. I didn't go to Yale. I went to Clark College. And so my theory is that, you know, just dig into who you are. Embrace who you are. And through that, you can find success.
We're settling in today and learning about the fascinating life and career of Kenny Leon, who's made a deep impression on Atlanta's cultural scene before moving on to become a Broadway and television theater director. Well, you write about trust when directing a cast. You look for the person who you say is going to be the termite, you know, and feel like it pays to be really direct with these people. Tell the truth. Deal with it. Do you remember that when you first had to tell that painful truth as a director?
Well, I think that, you know, life is about, I think I'm authentic. I think when I work with someone like Samuel L. Jackson, who's a great friend and colleague, but, you know, he respects someone who's going to tell him the truth as a director, you know, when it's not working, when it is working. If I'm working with Denzel Washington, it's like, man, tell me the truth. When you work with folks like Felicia Rashad and Viola Davis, I mean, these are some talented folks. They don't need me to be great. They're already great. I just need to be that authentic audience member that they have access to, you know, 2 or 3 months before they get the audience in, who's going to really be themselves and tell the truth. So authenticity is really important to me. That's why I wear tennis shoes today, you know. Number one, it reminds me of my grandmother, so I started wearing them when she passed away.
How did those remind you of your grandmother?
Well, you know, because I used to wear these red Reeboks when she was alive, and I remember asking her, like, is it cool to wear tennis shoes with anything, you know, like even to church? And she was like, baby, God don't care what you look like, you know, but I would suggest that you accessorize better. So I said, wow. So I took that to mean, like, don't just have that red pair. Just, you know, have many many colors of tennis shoes, and then match your bow tie with them and match your shirt. And so today, you know, I have a closet full, and I'm working with my friends at Adidas, and they really support most of the causes I'm about. So, so whenever I have on the tennis shoes, I might have on a tuxedo at the Tony Awards, but I look down and see my gold Reeboks, and I smile because I think of Grandma. And then I'm reminded of, hey, don't get full of yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have a Tony Award, you may make a little money, but you're still just a country boy from humble beginnings, and you still have to remember that life is about sharing and respecting others and trying to rid the world of stupid things that separate us from our beauty. So all of my projects are really about the same thing. You know, how do you serve each other? How do you get rid of those walls of racism and classism and sexism? And how do you help that next generation carry the torch further than you carried it? Mm.
Well, we have just 2 minutes left for this segment, but we've got a lot more time to stretch out with you, Kenny Leon. But you write a fascinating thing about, you know, acting is very much in the body, your reading cues, and there are times when you've had to let actors go, and you said they're begging to be released. So how do you know when it's working with somebody, when somebody's just being difficult and you can work it out, or you just have to let it go?
Well, over years, you know, you have to trust your own instinct. And if I'm a director, I should be able to discover and see talent. I should know what that looked like. I should also know what fear looks like. And so in the first 7 days that I spend with a cast, I'm trying to see how those actors process information. I'm trying to see how the entire cast processes information. And people are different, you know. Sometimes a person may need to be taken out to dinner and nurtured. Another time, you may need to yell at a person. 'Cause a director is a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a doctor, a father, all of that. So if you don't figure out where the trouble is in the first week, then it's going to be at your detriment. So I'm always trying to figure out who's going to fit, you know, who's afraid. And sometimes, for instance, early career actors, they have a hard time working in the shadows of famous or better actors, and they disappear. So my job is like, okay, either to prepare that young person to grow up in a hurry, or either to realize that they cannot handle this, and now is not the good time. And also, I've been fortunate, like when we did The Wiz Live, to be able to say Shanice Williams, who hadn't ever done anything professional at that point, to know that she had something special and to give her that platform
I so hate to interrupt you, but we got more time with you. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Kenny Leon. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. My guest this hour is theater director Kenny Leon. He's founder of Atlanta's True Colors Theater Company, among many other things. You may know him as a Broadway director. He won a Tony Award for directing the 2014 revival of A Raisin in the Sun. Here he is, accepting the award.
Denzel, Denzel, Denzel. He's truly a theater inspiration. And I want to thank all the women of A Raisin in the Sun, LaTanya, Anika, Sophie. I love you to death. I love you, Jennifer. To my mother, I want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm looking forward to a day when every child in America can have a little piece of theater in their daily educational lives.
Next week, he'll be at the Carter Center in Atlanta to talk about and read from his new memoir, Take You Wherever You Go. Kenny, was Denzel Washington in that production?
Yes, he was. He was
Denzel.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting about it, I was blessed to have worked on two Broadway productions of A Raisin in the Sun. In 2004, my first Broadway play was A Raisin in the Sun with Sean P. Diddy Combs playing the role of Walter Lee. And it was a great production that garnered 10 Tony nominations, except they did not nominate the director. And Felicia Rashad always says, I guess the play directed itself. And she won the Tony Award for Best Leading Actress. It was the first time an African-American had won in that category. But then in 2014, to get an opportunity to do the same play, this time with Denzel playing that role, it was real special for me because, number one, Denzel was a little older than actors who had played that role previously. But we did that on purpose because we felt that Walter Lee has one opportunity, one dream, and making the character older made the dream more desperate. And I thought he was the anchor of that production. But I had a really amazing cast in that, and I was fortunate enough to be nominated and to win the Tony Award for that production. But absolutely, Denzel Washington is an American icon. And LaTanya Richardson Jackson, Samuel L. Jackson's wife, who I met in Atlanta many years ago, played his mother in that role, and she was really, really incredible. So only good things and good thoughts about that production.
Well, so this production is part of your, I could say it's a lifelong mission to diversify the kind of productions that people see. The playwright, the African-American playwright, Lorraine Hainsbury, wrote The Raisin in the Sun, made its debut on Broadway in 1959. Here she is talking about the play.
In terms of a statement, I think what the play tries to say is that we really don't have very much in the world at all if we allow any aspect of money values to transcend the requirements that are necessary for human dignity.
So you chose that play. You've chosen so many other plays based on who wrote the play, whose voices are included in that kind of drama. What are you looking for when you are reading, confronting, considering a play?
Well, I'm looking for intellect. I'm looking for great storytelling. I mean, if you just listen to Lorraine Hainsbury, I mean, when she made that, did that interview, she's like 29, 30 years old, and she passed away at 34. Mm. She was an amazing writer, and A Raisin in the Sun is a story that continues to give. And there are other people like James Baldwin, who was an amazing writer during that time, and I would like to do more of his work, but his work doesn't get produced as much because it seems didactic to people. Because as African-Americans, as Africans in America, writers, they wrote specifically for the period in which they lived. So sometimes those plays have a hard time transitioning to now. But I think as artists, we got to do a better job. I have to do a better job of introducing those works to a new generation. So I'm interested in that. Other than that, good writing is good writing, regardless of race and culture. But this country needs to have a wider view of where great writing and where great stories come from. So we're a better country when we hear everyone's story, when we hear the woman's story, when we hear black, when we hear brown, when we hear Native Americans, when we hear all of our stories, then we're better. And there's more room for diversity on Broadway, on television, and also in the film world.
Well, when did you first see that? When did you first hear your story on stage?
The first time I heard my story on stage was 1987 in New York City. A young writer by the name of August Wilson had written a play entitled Fences. And I saw Jane Drill Jones and Mary Alice and Courtney Vance perform those roles. And for the first time, I sat in the dark with the whole world, and I heard the rhythms of my grandmother and my mother, even though the playwright was from Pittsburgh, writing about a neighborhood in Pittsburgh. It said everything about my family in Florida. So at that point, theater became more than entertainment. It became introducing one's life and culture to the broader community. And when others see you, that's when life becomes richer and more beautiful.
Mm. This became one of the launches of what you'd called the Holy Trinity, that triangle of Mamie, your grandmother, your mother, and August Wilson. Loving his work, collaborating with him. Let's hear just a little bit of the play, that play, Fences, that you directed much later on Broadway. Here's Denzel Washington playing Troy in Fences.
Can I ask you a question? The hell you got to ask me? Mr. Stawinski, the one you got the questions for. How come you ain't never liked me?
Like you?
Who the hell said I got to like you? What law is there say I got to like you? Want to stand up in my face and ask a damn fool-ass question like that, talking about liking somebody. Come here when I'm talking to you.
So that's Denzel Washington in the play that you directed, the production of Fences. Denzel, this is, you know, such a classic story, but in, you know, it's death of a salesman. It's the father and the son tension. It's the hardworking mother. But what does August Wilson do to transform it beyond just, I don't know, the story we know?
Well, I mean, August, he found universality in the specifics, you know. So he wrote in a very specific way about a specific family in a specific part of the country. And when writers do that, whether they be O'Neill or Tennessee Williams, Arthur Miller, when you do that, that's where greatness springs from. And August was very good. He had a very good ear. He had a very good imagination. And it spoke to everyone in the universe who had a willing ear. If you imagine this country without August Wilson, then there is a huge hole in the soul of America. He spent 23 years of his life writing 10 great plays, and I had the pleasure of, you know, directing three of his plays for Broadway, and he worked with two other amazing directors, the great Lloyd Richards and the great Marion McClinton. So I feel honored and blessed to have been in that army of directors that had opportunity to get to know him and get to work with him. And what he always thought that if everyone brings their game, then you got a real good chance of doing something really special, which means that when the page is blank, he sits there. When the page is blank, he feels that page. But now he needs a director to interpret it. He needs actors to put their muscle on it. You know, he needs costume designer, lighting designer, set designers. And so he always loved the collaborative nature of theater when everyone brought their game. But if you didn't bring your game, you know, he was very frustrated by artists that didn't bring the game. So I've learned a lot by him, and I try to bring my game every time, and I try to encourage other collaborators who work with me. They have to bring their game as well.
I'm speaking with the award-winning director, Kenny Leon. His new memoir, Take You Wherever You Go, follows him from his humble origins to his award-winning work as director of stage and live-to-stage television specials. Well, we have moved forward from this climb for you from living in Tallahassee. You moved to St. Petersburg with your mom and her new husband. Two more siblings added to it. Went to Clark, as you said. But one of the important things there that you write in the book about is how you got to Clark. You know, that no one in your family had ever been to college before. And you were part of this Upward Bound program that really made a difference in your life. And this is one of those programs. You were also part of CETA, a federal program that many people say, oh, this is a handout. This is one of the things that is in the crosshairs of budgetary purse string pullers. I just wondered what your thoughts are about what that program did for you.
You're going to make me laugh because, you know, when I think about our country, one of the things we have to do as Americans, we have to embrace our history. And, you know, and the sad fact is that we began on the foundation of slavery, and there's a lot of catch up that we have to do. And programs like those affirmative action programs like Upward Bound, they allowed low-income families like my family and Angela Bassett, they allowed us to go to college. And if you really go back and you think about it, and you have a group of people that were denied education and that their religion was stripped from them, and it's almost like starting over, you know. And so I don't think we have to point fingers at the past, you know. I think we have to build from the past and accept from whence we've come. And so I think affirmative action programs work. I think programs like CETA work as a way to level the playing ground. And so I'm certainly a recipient of that, and I think I'm giving back in a way that every American citizen should give back. And that's one of the things I learned from August Wilson. You know, he reminded me, whether your ancestors came here on the bottom of a Dutch slave vessel, or whether your people came here seeking political freedom or religious freedom, whatever the case may be, whatever the shade of your skin, we all are owed the rights and privileges of that which is American. We are all American citizens. And that's what makes us a beautiful country, when we embrace that the country belongs to all of us. And we have to level the playing field for all of us.
Well, and that's part of your mission when you became the first associate artistic director at the Alliance Theater in Atlanta, then the director. And this is a venerable institution, but 90% white audience when you came on, and who could afford to go to the theater. So how did your mission to produce work from diverse playwrights to get more people in the theater go over?
Well, I think that's, you know, I hear my grandmother, who died in 1991, I hear her voice whispering to me, you know, you have to take you wherever you go, which mm-hmm. is where the title of the books come from. So when I went to the Alliance Theater, I couldn't pretend I was someone else. When I stepped through those doors, I was a black kid who grew up poor in Tallahassee, Florida, who is now trying to introduce the theater to new writers and introduce new audiences to that theater. That's the best I can do. I think that's the best any of us could do. Like, be yourselves. Take you wherever you go, and then you would indeed be a blessing to that person and to that community. I don't know, I sort of lost track of what you asked
me. Well, I asked you about the response to that. I mean, that was a hard thing. In many ways, you are upending a cultural institution that's been doing things the same way for a long time.
Absolutely, but life is more beautiful when you just, you know, take you and let people know you and let people. I have many white and Jewish friends who've gotten to know me, and that's been a blessing to their lives, and they have been a blessing to my life. You know, I have no idea what it is to be white, Jewish, or Latino, but when I meet people who are authentically from those cultures and they bring them their whole selves to me, then I'm better because I receive their authentic selves. And yes, life is hard, but you know what? We can either do what we know is right, or we can listen to social media and listen to what is popular. And I don't think that gets us anywhere.
I
got death threat letters when, you know, back in the day when I was named to that position. And I remember sharing with my assistant at the time, Jody Feldman, who's still at the Alliance Theater, and she was like, wow, you got a death threat. And I was like, you know, you think about it for 5 minutes, and then it's like, you know what, that's just fear. And I'm not going to let fear run my life. And I think a lot of folks let fear run their lives. So, you know, forget the fear, turn to love.
Always trust that gut. Has it ever failed you?
My gut has never failed me. Mm. I failed my gut sometimes, but my gut has never failed me.
Well, we're talking this hour with the award-winning stage director, Kenny Leon. We're going to get on to more of the conversation just ahead. But Kenny, just quickly before we go to the break, tell me, mm-hmm. what do? Can you name your favorite play, or, you know, is that like asking which is your favorite child?
Yeah, that's hard. There's so many great plays, you know what I mean? Of course, I love all 10 of August's plays, but I'm a huge fan of Tennessee Williams. I love The Rose Tattoo, which is a play that I have never had the opportunity to direct, but I love that play. I love Summer Miller. I love Lynn Nottage and Susan Laurie Parks. Ike Holter is a great new writer I love out of Chicago. I'm getting ready to do a play by Coleman Domingo at True Colors called DOT, which is dealing with early on Alzheimer's disease.
All right, I'm going to have to call cut again. I don't even know if play directors call cut, but I'm going to have to call that while we take a quick break. with Kenny Leon.
All right.
From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Tomorrow is Juneteenth, one of the nation's oldest celebrations of the end of slavery. We're going to consider the holiday's beginnings and learn about the largest slave auction in U.S. history. How did you learn about Juneteenth? You can let us know with a voicemail at 404-500-9457. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. How do you celebrate? We'd love to know. Award-winning director Kenny Leon upended the Atlanta theater scene when he became director of the Alliance Theater in the late 80s. He came in with a goal of growing and diversifying the audience and went on to Broadway, dramatic plays, and musical theater for television. He's even directed opera. We've been talking with him this hour about his work and his life and the formidable women who supported his dream. It's all coming from his memoir. So, Kenny, for you, this, you know, goes back to Mamie over and over again. You talked about the first play that she saw that you directed for the Alliance Theater, T-Bone and Weasel. But she also saw Fences. She did not love Fences. Why not?
I did not say she didn't love Fences.
I think, maybe I interpreted.
See?
Okay,
see?
That's on me. I will take that.
She saw Fences and... it's a very thin line for her between a play and real life. And at intermission of Fences, a man who deals with, infidelity. And I said, Grandma, are you enjoying the play? And she says, I don't see what there is to enjoy.
Hmm.
And basically because of the way he was treating his wife in the play. But she really enjoyed it as a form of entertainment, but she wasn't enjoying the journey of the story. So it was just how her closeness to, you know, to watching live theater. But she loved the production. She responded that way because of the way the guy was treating his wife, which probably had something to do with mirroring what happened in her life.
Yeah, so it was difficult for her or too close to the bone. And that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people go to theater. You've directed things like The Wiz and Hairspray, for a release, for entertainment. But you're asking people to confront something different. And I wonder about that for you because you're like an embodiment of the American dream. But yet you've produced all these plays, especially in the Pittsburgh cycle, August Wilson cycle, that are about people excluded from that dream. So what's the draw for you there?
Well, all the reasons that I do all the plays, they're all the same. I'm always looking like, how would this play or film impact Americans or people in the world? So even in Hairspray Live, it seems like a fun musical, but that at the center of that is the song that Motor Mouth sings about you have to know your past. And Jennifer Hudson sings that song in Hairspray. But that's the political part of it. That's the message I want people to take home, that we need to understand our past and we need to be responsible for moving and integrating people and moving the good part of America forward. So every time, I don't care how fun the play might seem, if it's a Kenny Leon production, there is something that I want you to walk out of that door with, You know, and most of the time it's just reaffirming love, and it's like losing the walls that separate us from our beauty.
Mm. That was a big hit, Hairspray Live, which was a live-to-television. Ariana Grande mm-hmm. was the star. Here she is from the place singing Can't Stop the Beat.
So what do you have to say, Penny?
I am now a checkerboard chick.
You can't stop a river as it rushes to the sea. You can try.
Ariana Grande from Hairspray. Jennifer Hudson was also in that production. You've worked with some really big names, obviously, but you have this philosophy that goes back to Mamie. I'm trying to remember it exactly. Is it everybody on the bed or everyone on the floor? Did I remember that right?
Oh, yeah, I live by that.
So what does that mean?
That's like when you visited her, you know, she might have one guest room, but if there were eight people, she didn't believe in like one person get into bed. Or two people get into bed and then everybody else is on the floor. She thought that was unfair. So her thing was like, you got to figure out a way. Everybody gets on that bed or everybody gets on the floor. So everyone goes through the same thing. So when I build ensemble on whatever production I'm working on, if it was Hairspray Live, you know, Kristen Chenoweth and Harvey Fierstein and that wonderful group of people, it was Elijah Kelly. It was all about what one person did, everybody did. If one person was late, then we all did 10 push-ups. If Ariana Grande was late, then all 50 people in the room did push-ups, including stage managers, including myself. If we're doing a Raisin in the Sun, you know, whatever everybody does, everybody does. So if I'm late, then me, Denzel Washington, and LaTanya Jackson, everybody does push-ups. So just to instill the sense of ensemble and working together. But that always goes back to my grandmother. Because you can't have a great production unless you have a great team. And you have to build a whole team. It's never about one person. And it's all about us going through this together. So on Hairspray Live, that was 800 people on the crew going through something together just for one night. If it's The Wiz Live, it's 500 people all together doing that. If it's a Broadway show, it's 100 folks all working together. And, yeah, that came from Grandma. We're better when we all work together.
Well, so you've done these huge adaptations from Broadway stage onto television, but also mm-hmm. a number of revival plays, which you won the Tony for example. Tell me about approaching a revival. You know, A Raisin in the Sun, that was a play from what? It was first on Broadway in 1959. How do you get into that? How do you make it the Kenny Leon production of something?
Well, I always treat every production as is a brand new play. So even with the two productions of A Raisin in the Sun that I did, separated by 10 years, I'd never thought about the first production while I was working on the second production. I'm always thinking about, okay, the writer just wrote this play, and how does it impact the world today? When I did Children of a Lesser God on Broadway, I didn't think about what was done 40 years ago. I thought about, what does this play have to say to us now? And a play about a hearing teacher falling in love with his deaf student. A deaf co-worker. And it was like, it's about how we don't listen to each other in America, politically, socially. We don't understand the difference that separates us. So I keep plays fresh because I'm thinking that the writer just wrote it. When I did The Wiz, I didn't think about what George Faison did many, many years ago, which was a wonderful production. I thought about, how does The Wiz relate to us now? How do I cast it? How do I get the humor to play now? You know, what makes it work now? I don't want to put people in a theater and say, oh, let's go back and remember then. No, it's about walking out of that theater. What does this have to say to me and my children, my family, my neighborhood, my country, my world?
We haven't talked much about your dad. We talked about your mom and of course, your grandmother a little. But your dad, he wasn't really there. Your mom, you know, left him behind when she moved to St. Petersburg. Not very present in your life. But when you were about to direct your first Broadway play, you called him. What kind of response did you get from him?
I thought you said you didn't want to talk about him.
I didn't say I didn't want to talk about him. I said we haven't talked about your dad.
Right. So then there's a reason for that.
Do you not want to talk about your dad?
I don't care.
Well, it's just
I love my dad as a person. My dad was just not a very good father. And, you know, it's like most of the men who were close to my stepfather, who I didn't agree with in terms of his relationship to raising children and discipline. So I didn't agree with that. So I thought that wasn't correct. And with my father, my biological father, he just wasn't present. He was 19 years old when I was born and just never understood what being a father was. So I respect Leroy Leon as my sperm donor father, and I know I looked like him, and I got my sense of humor from him, but he just wasn't a father. So as a human being, he was great. As a father, not there. So that's all that was. I found out that the men in my life, they had great. They looked at the world from a practical place, you know. You got to get a job, you got to get a craft, you got to, you know, do what you need to do today. And the women in my life, they were about vision. You know, how do you make the world better for your children's 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 children? And that was real meaningful to me. But I have some men, older men in my life who were very good role models, like the Dr. Reverend Joseph Lowry, who was the president of SCLC, and people like Maynard Jackson, who became the mayor of Atlanta, and we became good friends. A lot of folks, Stanford Macover, and, you know, a lot of older men, but the men who were close to him in my life just didn't really serve those roles very well.
Kenny Leon is with me, very well known to Atlanta's theater set as founder of the True Colors Theater Company, and we're talking about his memoir, Take You Wherever You Go. It covers his growing up, his career as a Tony Award-winning, Emmy-nominated director, and the forces and really the people who shaped him. Well, I asked about your father because your grandmother and your mother gave you so much in believing in yourself. They believed in you so much. They told you to trust your gut. They told you to, you know, taught you to act and through their actions and through their conversations with you with trust. But that is something that now you are working with kids. You have for a long time with the True Colors, your True Colors Theater Company, and also this annual National August Wilson Monologue Competition. And you must meet so many kids who don't have that, who never had those forces in their life, who said, you can do it. And I wonder how you approach that with them.
Well, it goes back to the title of the book, Take You Wherever You Go. And those were the gifts that my mother and grandmother bestowed upon me. You know, it's just like, if you take you wherever you go, it's enough. And what I try to say to a poor white kid who may be living in Connecticut, or a black Latino who's living in a small town, or a poor black kid in Tallahassee, Florida, who think they have to be something other than themselves to be great or to find success. And I'm hoping that they read the book and they say, you know what? If I work on being my true, authentic self, I can do anything. I can accomplish anything. I don't need anything except that belief in myself and the belief in my own greatness.
There are so many turns in your life that you talk about, that things happened that pushed you in another direction or revealed to you more likely that you would go in another direction. You were going to law school in L.A. and your sister got in a terrible car accident. She's okay, thankfully.
No, not my sister, my friend.
I'm sorry.
Not my sister.
Right. But you came back to Atlanta and realized that that's not where you wanted to be. And I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Do you believe in fate, that you were meant to be in these places?
Somewhat. I think it's half fate, half hard work. I mean, a third hard work and a third of just discovering new ways to do stuff. But I think we all have certain stories or lives to live out. And, you know, I can't be someone else. You can only be yourself. Everybody else is taken. So it's like how to figure out what is my journey, what is my story, and then step into that. So I think we all have to step into, you know, and step into our greatness. And I also talk about this in the book. I find that every 7 to 10 years, you should sort of change jobs or reinvigorate yourself or change direction. Sometimes we become prisoners of our own success, even if it's limited success. You could be working at the McDonald's and making $30,000 a year and become a prisoner of that $30,000 when you got $100,000 waiting on you. So it's just realizing, don't Don't fall into the fear. Don't fall into the insecurity. You know, life is for the living. That's another thing from Grandma. She said, when you get old, you're not old until you can't do for yourself. And, you know, she had her own car, her own place up until she was like 85, you know, and she died at 87, you know, and she realized after she had those last two knee surgeries that, hey, I can't do for myself any longer. So you can just, you know, and I think I picked that up from her. So people say, are you ever going to retire? And the answer is, no, I'm not going to retire. And do what? You sit on the porch? No, I live life trying to be relevant. And trying to, that's why I love plays where I have cross-generation of people. I think it's special. I think when you're 10 years old, you have something special and unique to offer the world. When you're 20, you have something unique that's only 20-year-olds can give to the world. 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. In every decade, there's something unique and special that only a person that age can offer the world. So I keep trying to work and understand that, and hopefully I can continue to work until it's time for me to go on and join Grandma.
You mentioned several times, and you have today, when we're talking, you know, country boy from Tallahassee. Why is it important that you identify like that? Why will you always think of yourself as that?
Oh, absolutely. I think if you don't think of yourself and embrace your past, then it's a betrayal. It's a betrayal to all those people who, I'm a product of generational prayers. You know, my grandmother prayed me into existence from a world she didn't even know about. She'd never thought there were careers for directors and actors. So we all understand we are part of the process, you know what I mean? And sometime in our past, you know, blacks weren't even allowed to vote or to drink out of a water fountain. So we have to understand that part of what we do now is a part of what they started. So we give them success. We honor them by living properly. And that's for all of us, black, white, brown, doesn't matter.
Kenny Leon, what a pleasure speaking with you today. I want to thank you so much and ask you quickly, what's your next project?
I'm doing a Broadway play, starting rehearsal in September. No, first of all, I do a play in Atlanta called Dot, which is, I start that tomorrow. So that's going to be at the Southwest Arts Center. And then I do the play for Broadway called American Son, S-O-N, starring Kerry Washington and Stephen Pasquale. And I'm looking forward to that because that's about the relationship between police and community and love of country.
Very relevant topics today. I want to thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Love talking with you.
Kenny Leon, he is an award-winning director and he's going to be at the Carter Center on June 26th, reading from and talking about his memoir, Take You Wherever You Go. Lots of wisdom in there. And that's it for our show for today. We do always want to hear from you. You can call us at 404-500-9457. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook at OST Talk. And our show is produced by Fenley Fox and the Raven Taylor, Leighton Rowell, and Summer Evans. Sean Powers is senior producer. Susan Davis is executive producer. Our engineer is Tyler Morris. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Virginia Prescott. On Second Thought is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting.